Matthew 9:36. Because I know that you've just eaten. This is an afternoon service. I know about these things. But seeing these people, as the song that we sang today, someone mentioned it, I think, in a prayer, and then somebody was talking to me in the between the services about seeing people through the lens or through the eyes of Jesus. And when you see a country, not because of its drugs or because of its soccer team or because of its government and the violence, but you see them through the eyes of Jesus, it's going to change what you see. Matthew 9:36, I know it's a common missions, which for me, I try to run the other direction from things that are commonly used. But Matthew 9:36 says, but when Jesus, he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Then saith he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. Just a thought. Instead of going to Disney World, what stops you from going to a mission field? I'm not saying for a lifetime. I'm saying for a week. You know, I think about if you do go to Disney World, that's complicated. We know a lot of people that do that. I'm not saying I wouldn't ever do that, but it's complicated. You have to get plane tickets. You have to get a place to stay. You've got to decide how you're going to eat your meals. Are you going to buy some package that they provide, which might be easier but expensive? Or are you going to go out to eat on your own? Or and then where are you going to go if you're going to do that? And then if you're going to go to a park, I'm talking any of the parks, you have to buy a ticket, buy a bunch of tickets, and reserve the day that you're going to go and either take some kind of public transportation or reserve parking. You have to reserve it. You just can't go and park. And you can't just buy, you know, a ticket. You got to buy tickets for all the different places you're going to go. That's complicated. Can I tell you, you go to a mission field, you pick the mission field, you know, maybe you see one of the names or one of the faces on the board back there. You say, and you call them up, you email them and you say, hey, can we just want to come learn and help. And you buy a ticket and they'll probably help you find a place, and everything else is super simple, but it'll change your life in better and bigger ways than a mission field will. I asked my two of my daughters last night, would they rather go to a mission field or Disney World? And Riley said Disney World. But then I said, because she says Columbia was rough. and I don't know what else she said about it. And I said, well, if you got to pick the mission field, would it make a difference? And it did. She said, I had to think. She goes, I want to go to Spain. I don't know why she wants to go to Spain. Her sister went to Spain. Maybe that's why. But, you know, she sees this, and it's not a, there is a question in her mind. I would like to go to this place. I asked my daughter, and you know, it came down to with her, it was like, well, it depends on why I'm going. You know, I wouldn't go to a mission field for vacation, but I wouldn't, you know, she loves the beach. Well, that's where you're going to go on vacation. And I get that. You have an event in your life. You're going to celebrate it. One of those things. You're going to do that. But pick a mission field. You say, I want to know what the Philippines are like. I want to know what Russia's like. I want to know what South America's like. I want to know what Brazil's like. I've never been to Brazil. Or maybe you say, I want to go to an African country. You just do it. Just like you would book a ticket to anywhere else. And you call these people up and they will help you. They will probably love to have somebody there and bring them chocolate from America, or you know, something that they don't have, chocolate chips so they can make cookies, or brown sugar. A lot of places don't have that. And you'll make their month or whatever. But this is why we did this, because I said, well, you know, anybody can do this. Anybody can do this. But we need to see through the eyes of Jesus. I find it interesting in the verse here. It says, but when he saw, he lifted up his eyes and he looked on all these people. And if we were to go to the Mark passage, it talks about this. They had gone out into a desert place to take a rest, but the people followed them. And this is where he ends up feeding the 5,000 men. And I was talking to a friend recently. He said, research says we really believe that it probably was in that time just men, because out here in the desert place, it was not a place where you would take your family, and that likely that this was the place where the zealots would go. Which we see this in this verse, because it says that they were fainted. This word fainted is, I think it's only used here in the New Testament. It has the idea of being bothered, wearied because of outside forces, which when you look at it, as sheep were scattered. They were sheep. They were people that were wearied. Do you ever look at our government and it wearies you? State government, local government, federal government. And it's like, are they just in it for themselves? What are they? Do they care? Can you imagine? And we're in, I think, the best country in the world. Can you imagine going to Colombia that's run by communists that have cartels that they're in cahoots with, and they don't seem to want to care to do anything about it? In the town that we were in, if your license plate ends with a certain number, there's a couple days a week you can't drive. Maybe one, maybe 2 days. You can't drive on those days. Well, if you're rich enough to own enough cars so you can have the right numbers, then you can. But if you're not rich enough, obviously you can't. And it's supposed to cut down on smog. But all it does is cause people to ride around on mopeds that are smoking and motorcycles that are smoking. And it seems like the people that ride on those things, laws don't apply to them. They just do whatever they want to do. It's still chaos. So it forces you into taxis. It forces you into buses. And everything is so much more expensive. And as they talked about this, it's just like, this is crazy. This is crazy. And they're wearied. And then I look at Colombia and I also think, you know, there's these Catholic, which are more pagan in these foreign countries than they are in America, but they've got these shrines everywhere to Mary and to some other saint that they pray to and they worship. And why are people so open to the gospel? Because they're weary, because they faint, because they're disgusted and they're discouraged by their government. They're disgusted and they're discouraged because their religion is not helping them. How long have they been in the same problems? Decades and decades and decades. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. There is no hope in their churches down there. There is no hope in their government. And we can see that all around us, that people are facing the same thing. They're not getting hope. They're not getting that. They're getting promises. And so people around us, they're wearied. And it says they're scattered abroad. That this term scattered is the idea. It's actually the same word that's used when Judas was convicted and disgusted with himself for selling Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. And he cast those 30 pieces of silver. It's the same word. That these people they're castaways. They're likely outcasts, which is why another reason why we think that they were the zealots out here in the desert places, 5,000 of them. And they're coming to see Jesus. Why? Because they don't have the hope. And they see Jesus as someone that might be offering hope. Maybe he is the Messiah. Maybe he can unite us. Maybe he can heal my friend, my family member. And so what do we see? What we see is heart. It says he was moved with compassion. It's one word, and it's internally. You ever been so emotionally moved that you almost felt sick? Yeah, well, that's where Jesus was in this. He sees them, and his purpose in coming is to seek and to save the outcast, to seek and to save the lost. He said, I've come to preach the gospel to the poor. So in their culture, we think of poor as somebody who doesn't have money, right? Poor to them was somebody with a bad life. If you don't have money, you have a bad life. And so, but also, if you had an issue of blood that could not be healed, you had a bad life. If you were lame, you have a bad life. If you're blind, you have a bad life. If you have a lot of money, but everybody hates you, you have a bad life. That's Zacchaeus. So Jesus said, I came to preach good news, the gospel, to those who are poor. Matthew doesn't just say poor. He says poor in spirit, because that's the idea, is that those of us who see ourselves as our lives are bad because of our sin, The condition of our people is because of our sin. That's who Jesus comes to. And that's why he said to the blind, and the Pharisees, when he healed the blind man, said, oh, what, we're blind also? And he said, no, if you saw yourself as blind, then you could have been healed. But because you don't see yourselves as blind, you are blind. And you cannot see. You are deaf. because you will not hear. But if you're listening because you realize the brokenness of who you are, that's who I've come to. Well, this is who he came to. And he sees them as scattered abroad, as sheep without guidance, without leadership, without somebody to tell them. And he is moved because it cannot be done with just one person. So we need to see his heart, but we need to see the harvest. It says, then he said to his disciples, to the people that he was going, the next chapter is him sending them out. To the people that he was going to send out, he says, look, the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. The harvest is big. I think about harvest, and harvest is a good thing. Harvest means you were able to plant, and it grew, and now you have a crop. That's a great thing. You know, we have an expectation. It's just going to be in the grocery store, right? But in their day, no, it had to grow. And so you had harvest celebrations. I think it's a little insert in the bulletin is talking about those booths that they would build at harvest time as part of the celebration of harvest, that God brought them here, and it is a land flowing with milk and honey. That's the time we're in, and we're talking about a harvest party. That's what they would do. All kinds of cultures did that. In thanks to their God, or just the fact that, hey, we have this harvest. Good things happen. We're done. Now let's celebrate. Harvest is a joyous time. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. It's the metaphor of sowing and reaping. When you sow the seed of the gospel with a heart of compassion for them, you will reap in due time. In due season. And so you have this here, and he says, see this harvest, that it is plenteous. Look, you guys live in one of the biggest cities in the world. It's full of people. It's full of the harvest. And I know that the things that we see all the time, we get used to it. And it we get callous to it. But those people that honk at you, those people that ignore you or yell at you or rude to you or whatever, those people are the people that need the gospel. That they need this. And you know that, but don't ever, ever let it become a callous thing because, well, I'm just used to going by them. It's not what we do. No, it is what we do. It's what we should. And he's telling the disciples, see the harvest for what it is. It's a joyous occasion. Yes, it's a plenteous occasion, but there's opportunity. You know, maybe this is something that you're like, okay, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this here, but you know what? I want to give my life to this. And okay, throw a dart at the map. Maybe not the water, but throw a dart at the map, and it's a place with need. It really is. Okay, maybe not Charlotte. No, Charlotte. You know that 3 in 5 people in Charlotte were not born in Charlotte, and 1 in 5 people in Charlotte, North Carolina, were not born in the U.S. There are huge communities, just like up here in Charlotte, of foreign-born. They're huge. Nepali communities. There's 100 to 200,000 Ukrainians in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And it's these huge groups of people all over the world. You want to go? You want to go Australia? How about that? Try Australia out. There's not a lot of missionaries there. Madagascar. Well, I'm going to talk about Madagascar on Tuesday night. I think that's going to be fun. Madagascar is 25 to 30 million people. That's more people than Australia. And it's a much smaller island. And there's probably less than 10 gospel preaching missionaries there. 5 that I can name. Most of them are in the cities. I know 2 that are outside the cities. And the city is maybe 5 million. So we're talking 20 to 25 million people that really don't have anybody. You want to talk about a country that's wide open to the gospel. Come Tuesday night and you'll hear about that. But see the opportunity. And another thing about the harvest, it's urgent. If you don't get the grain or the fruit while it's ripe, what happens? It spoils. You have a time frame. People have a time frame, right? We don't know when they're going to die. You don't die when you're 80 just because. You might die earlier. And they're all around us. And there is a time stamp on each one of them. And you are here in their time stamp. It is our opportunity, and we need to see it as urgent, that we've got to get out there and get that harvest. We've got to be sowing the seeds of the gospel, cultivating the soil of their lives, so that when it's time for them, that we're there to catch that fruit. see the harvest, and then last, see that help is needed. Verse 38, pray ye therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest, that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. It's his harvest. It's his harvest. It's his work that he is doing in their lives, but he does it through us. So back in these communities and for many centuries before this, when the harvest came, it was a community event. Yes, the family, yes, hired workers, but everybody went out into the fields because you had that timestamp. And that's why you'd have community celebrations. It's because, hey, we got it all done. We got it all in. And maybe it was more, maybe it was what we wanted, but praise God, we've got something to help us get through the winter time. But it was an event that you needed people. And sometimes you had to hire people that, well, I grew up in Kansas. There's a lot of people in Kansas that they're custom croppers, which means they take their equipment and they go all across Kansas. They go all across Texas. They all across Nebraska, and they're hired to go just take their combine through the fields and dump it in their hoppers and their wagons to take to the co-op. That's what you do. Well, it's because you need people to bring in the harvest. And if there's one thing that I have been burdened for, is that there are not enough people. There's not enough people here. There's not enough people there. As I travel, there are, I don't know, half the churches are looking for another staff member. And then there's always churches that are looking for pastors. And it's not uncommon to go 2 years without a pastor. It's not uncommon. I see it all the time. I know I have a friend that his church has been without a pastor. It seems like a couple of years now. I know of another church in Pennsylvania. They've been without one for 6 months or more. And it's a long time. Another one down the road from us. It took them 2 years to get a pastor, maybe 3 years. It takes a long time because there's just not enough. And there's not enough people surrendering to go do those things. Well, I was just in a church in Wisconsin this fall preaching, and they were without a pastor. And the reason they were able to get one is because a man in the church who grew up in the area is in his 50s or whatever. He said, okay, I'll do it. God, if this is what you want me to do, then I'll step into that role. And I think we're going to, the same happened in my brother-in-law's church. He's the pastor now. It's because he's like, well, I'm here and we need one. I'll step into that role. And it takes people saying, hey, there is a need. And I need, maybe the reason I see that need is so I can meet that need. If there's trash on the floor here at church, it's not so that you can tell somebody else about it. It's so that you can pick it up, right? You see it, you meet it. And as we have this need, maybe you're a person that God is saying, you could do more in your life than what you're doing. You could go to some place that has no one to tell them about Jesus, and you could see me change lives through you. You don't have to be good at it. You just have to do it, because it's the power of God through you. In fact, the worse you are at it, the better off you are, because where you are weak, there he is strong. And you can say, Lord, I can't, but you can.